So there's been a lot of tech talk this week, particularly about all those celebrities whose nude photos got plucked out of the cloud and stuck on some websites and into the ether of American popular culture. How did that happen, and what does it mean? And is Apple in trouble for what happened this week, which would not be good news just 5 days before they're going to make a big announcement next Tuesday about their new iPhone 6 and their new iOS 8. And for all of this, we turn to a guy who knows so much about tech that Yahoo said, you know what, come and start up our new tech department. We're going to have a new Yahoo Tech, and we want you to run it. And here he is, David Pogue. Hi, David. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So the story of Jennifer Lawrence and Kate Upton and Kirsten Dunst and these other actresses and musicians like Rihanna, their nude photos getting out earlier this week has created quite a bit of concern with lots of people who have Apple iCloud accounts. I try to tell them, nobody wants to see you naked, so don't worry about that. But how much should we be concerned about stories like this?
I agree with you. If you're not a young, hot Hollywood actress that people want to see naked, I don't think you're a target.
Yeah, if people don't pay to see you with your clothes on...
That's exactly right. Now, that's not to say that we can't learn from this episode and we can't do better with our passwords and our security questions. From everything that we've read, both by the guy who did the hack and by Apple's own investigation, they did not exploit some flaw in Apple's iCloud. Instead, what they did was they found out the answers to these actresses' security questions. What was your nickname as a kid? What was your first dog's name? What was the street you grew up on? Those are the questions that you have to answer in order to change the password. So there are many indications that that is what these hackers did, is they just researched the actresses. There's a lot of information about them out there, and used that to reset their password. So it's not the security flaw was the design of the security question system, not, you know, some bug.
Okay, so what do we do about that? Because all of us have had that problem where we try to have different passwords for all of the different places we visit and all of our bank accounts and credit card accounts and all that sort of stuff, although I maintain it's impossible to remember or even have a new one every time. So we've all had to click that thing that says forgot password, and that's where you get to those security questions.
That's right.
What do we do about that, or what could they have done about that?
The advice the security experts give us is unfollowable. Nobody can have a different password for every site that contains no English words and a number and a punctuation and a capital letter and change it every 30 days. It's not doable. No one could possibly do that. So I have three suggestions. Suggestion number one is use the security question thing, but make the answers unrelated to the questions. So this is what I was advised to do. Somebody guessed my security questions a year and a half ago and got into my iCloud account. And what Apple's guys told me was, next time when it says, what street did you grow up on, type in chocolate marshmallows. You know, just make something up. No one's going to be able to find that information out. It means essentially coming up with three more passwords that you write down somewhere. Another possibility is to turn on this very technical feature called two-factor verification. And what that means is anytime someone tries to get into your account from a new computer or phone, like a hacker, it sends the Apple or Google or Microsoft sends you a text message with a special code that you have to enter as a second sort of password. That is a very good barrier against getting hacked. Today, I posted at yahootech.com a step-by-step guide on how you do that. And then the third suggestion I have is to use one of those password manager programs. These are free or cheap programs with names like Dashlane and LastPass that let you come up with ridiculous, complicated passwords. In fact, they generate them for you, but you don't have to remember them. These programs fill them in for you. So there's definitely steps we can take. They all require some effort.
And you mentioned Microsoft and Google along with Apple, and it's entirely possible that for some of these actresses whose pictures got out there, that they weren't necessarily in their iCloud account. They could have been on their Google Drive account or their Dropbox account or somewhere else, right?
Right. So from what I've read, most of them came from iCloud backups. That is, out of the box, your iPhone makes a backup on Apple's iCloud service so that if you lose your phone or it breaks, you haven't lost all your data. And what these hackers did was they figured out how to access these actresses' backups online. And for that, that two-factor authentication doesn't work. It doesn't protect that, which is a legitimate criticism of Apple. They should have the two-factor business protect the backups as well. At the moment, they don't. So that is apparently where most of them came from, but not all. Some of them also came from Google Drive or Microsoft's OneDrive and other sources. They're all, you know, suspect to the same thing. It's just that in Hollywood, the iPhone is very popular, so that tends to be where a lot of this stuff wound up.
All right, well, then that leads us to the new iPhone. I mentioned that Apple has scheduled a big announcement for next Tuesday, September 9th, in which we're going to learn what the new iPhone will look like and what the new operating system will look like. What do you know that we can expect?
Well, I've read the same rumor articles anyone can read, but what's pretty clear is that it'll be called the iPhone 6. It will have a revised design, probably more rounded in the back, and that it will be larger. Most people are saying there will be two models, like 4.7-inch screen and 5.1-inch screen. So both of them bigger. That seems to be what the public wants these days. There's a lot of talk about it having an NFC chip. That's near-field communication. Basically, that means you can pay for things at checkout counters with your phone, rather than a credit card. Google's Android phones have had NFC for a long time. It hasn't, the paying business hasn't really caught on. You don't see a lot of people using it. But if Apple could get it going, it would be really kind of cool for those who choose to use it.
David, I have been talking with our IT guy here at the radio station, Jose Hernandez, about this for about 3 years. I'm surprised that here we've gotten to the year 2014 and we haven't gotten to the point where you can do that, because I know in other parts of the world, they do use their phone to pay for so much that some people don't even carry a credit card with them because it's all embedded in their phone and they're using a mobile payment system. Why has it taken it so long here?
Well, I think there are a bunch of reasons. One is we are a big country with a lot of banks and a lot of different credit cards, each of whom has their own, you know, protocols. There's a big trust factor to be overcome in this country. We are a naturally cynical population. A lot of people want to believe that this stuff, will be safe enough to use. But above all, the terminals have to work with the phones, in other words, the cash registers, and they don't in many places. In many places, there is no reader for the NFC chip. Those things will have to be retrofitted. Tens of millions of little shops and restaurants and gas stations. So right now, most of them are just designed to swipe a real credit card and not to wave your phone.
So what they need is maybe one giant retailer, hello Walmart, to make some sort of deal and say, you know what, we're going to install these and we're going to lead the way, and then Target and McDonald's and Starbucks and all the others might follow along, and eventually it gets into every outlet in America. But that takes a long time, I guess.
That's exactly right. And that's what's exciting about Apple getting involved, because frequently Apple's involvement in some cause or some technology, back in the early days, it was Wi-Fi. That was an Apple thing. They threw their weight behind. And, you know, before that, CDs and DVDs and so on. Frequently, Apple throwing its weight behind some technology is what makes it catch on. It's a chicken and egg problem that has to be jump-started somehow.
Okay, so we're going to have the near-field communication chip there for mobile payments eventually, and we're going to have bigger screens. But I got to tell you, I'm an iPhone user. I didn't buy iPhone 1, but I bought iPhone 2. And then they came out with 3, and I didn't buy that because it didn't seem like it had enough cool stuff in it. And then when they finally came out with the 4S with Siri, I said, oh, well, I want to have that technology, and I bought that. But I didn't buy the 5 because it wasn't different enough. Will the 6 be different enough to make 4S owners like me, or even iPhone 5 owners, go, ooh, now this has definitely got to be in my pocket?
Well, I think you are typical. I mean, most people probably get a new phone every other year at the most frequent, partly because that's the way the cell phone contracts are structured. And also, yes, when these Android phones or these iPhones are updated, generally, you know, they add stuff, they improve stuff each version, but not always enough to make you leap from last year's phone. So I think this is going to be the year where the number changes. In other words, Apple goes, you know, Apple 4, Apple 4S, Apple 5, Apple 5S. iPhone 5, iPhone 5S. So every other year is just a spit and polish renovation. Every other year they just make minor changes. So this is one of the years when they will make big changes and change the number of the phone.
Okay.
So I would think you'd want to look at this one.
All right. What's going to be inside there that will also make things better for me? In other words, what's in the new operating system they're coming out with, iOS 8?
iOS 8 looks really cool. That's a really well-deserved modification of last year's iOS 7, which has been very successful. Really different looking through a lot of people, but it's generally been very successful. With a ton of useful changes, some of the most exciting have to do with the keyboard. Entering text on these touchscreen phones is, of course, really tedious and annoying. And Steve Jobs always said, you're going to use our keyboard, our on-screen keyboard, or nothing. And now Tim Cook is saying, no, it's okay for you to install other companies' keyboard styles if that will help you enter text more easily. So there's a very popular one in the Android world called Swipe, where instead of tapping the keys, you drag your finger rapidly over the keyboard to spell words. It's easier to see in a YouTube video than it is to describe. But so now, finally, the iPhone will be able to have features like that. So they're opening it up and just refining a lot of cool features. And that's called iOS 8, and that will be free, and that will be free to everybody. It doesn't require you to buy the new phone.
So I'll be able to install that on my 4S?
You will.
Okay. And what about wearables? We hear a lot about this. I'm not sure exactly what they mean. The only thing I've heard about wearables so far is that companies are coming out with watches that connect to your phones, which means I don't have to reach in my pocket for the actual phone anymore. Is Apple going to come out with something wearable for us?
There are a lot of rumors and some good evidence to the fact that, well, we know that Apple is working on a smartwatch. And there is some evidence that they will announce this, too, on Tuesday in California. Quite a bit of evidence, actually. Their designer, Johnny Ive, has appeared at conferences saying how excited he is. It's made of curved glass. It'll hug your wrist. It'll make all the previous attempts look absolutely Neanderthal. So there remains the problem that you hinted at of why. Like, we have a phone in our pocket. Is that so much more difficult to pull out than to hold our wrist before our eyes and see that text message or check that weather report? So far, there's not a million great pieces of evidence that we need that. But there are some, and one of them is the health tracking, the fitness tracking, the sleep tracking. A device on your wrist can measure your body and your activity and your health in ways that a phone cannot. And it's, you know, if you've been wearing one of these fitness bands, like the Up Band or the Fitbit, it's really fascinating and motivating to see just what a sedentary sloth you are. So I have a feeling Apple will if they have a watch, it will have a big health component to it.
Sleep tracking?
Yeah, sleep tracking is fantastic. Like, right now, you basically pass out for 8 hours every night. You don't know what happens to you. It's a black box in your life.
Yep.
Right? And so now, when you wear one of these bands, when you wake up, you look at your phone, there is a graph of what happened to you during the night. When were you in light sleep? When were you in deep sleep? How many times did you wake up? And it's truly a fascinating insight into what used to be a completely hidden third of our lives.
I'll tell you, David, I stopped wearing a watch 10 years ago when I got the iPhone, because that is my watch in my pocket. And I can't imagine having to put a watch back on now. I certainly remember that when I did wear a watch, I took it off at night.
Well, that's you. You need a more comfortable watch, I guess.
I guess I do. Maybe Apple will come up with it. Last thing I want to ask you here while we're talking about phones is Amazon this year came out with their Fire Phone. Is that a bust?
I'd say it's too soon to say, but I think the odds are yes, it will be a bust, just like the original Kindle was a bust. But that is absolutely Amazon's master plan. They do this every time. They come out with something that's early and clunky and unrefined, and they see which way the wind is blowing. They look at people's reactions, see which things they like, and then they come up with a new model the next year, and a new model the next year. And the next thing you know, the Amazon Kindle is what we know it to be, which is ubiquitous and cheap and useful and well-designed. So right now there's not really enough to justify getting the Fire Phone, although it is a very good first smartphone, I find. I think people who are overwhelmed by the complexity of Android or even the iPhone would find it simple to use. But I will bet you that Amazon will stick with it year after year until they nail it.
David Pogue and his crew will certainly have complete coverage on Yahoo Tech of the announcement that Apple will make next Tuesday and whatever new stuff that is on the horizon, as well as they do from all of the other companies. And you can go there today and find out about that two-step verification process in a piece that David has on Yahoo Tech right now. Always a pleasure, Mr. Pogue. Thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.